Now we get over onto page 76, which is a very important page in the book. Because once we've identified these things in step 4, bring them to the surface in step 5, and 6 and 7, we're going to bring these things into some adjustments. We're going to bring down some of the things we have too much of, and we're going to try to grow in the areas of things where we are lacking. And once the bar of self is removed, then these adjustments can be made in these two steps once they're brought to the surface. And then looking at page 76, it kind of shocks me sometimes to look at it and study of it. I read it many, many times. But little did I know from quite a few months ago that page 76 contains 4 steps. It talks about 6, 7, 8, and 9. It's the only page in the book. It's kind of crowds up there. It's kind of a log jam there. But he talks about it, and he says, if we brought these things to this rate, we're ready to eliminate now. We see the damaging factor. We see what we got, and we see how damaging it's been. And then relating it to another person and to God even intensifies that. So we're ready to get rid of it at this point. If you can answer to your satisfaction on these first 5 proposals, then look at step 6. We have emphasized the willingness of being indispensable. Are we now ready to God remove from us all things which we have admitted are objectable? And this is where we get to where these things are. We get into a lot of discussions about character defects and shortcomings, and it lumps them all together. And I don't know really today what I like to look at my. I know that I was very lacking in tolerance. Ooh, I couldn't tolerate nothing. I was very short of love, and I know that love is simply the ability to be concerned about another person's welfare. Self-centered people are not very much concerned about other people's welfare. And I had a lot of the Hollywood version of love, you know, but I didn't have too much of that concern for other people's welfare. Self-centered people like to change. They don't like to tolerate. And self-centered people can't time life. They are very intolerable. You know, life's got to run on his time. So we can see why these people may be, because of self, these great factors develop. Now, I really don't know, really, as the book says, that when you've done one, you have done the other. I really don't know. We get in our discussions about what my problem was. Was my problem fear or lack of courage? I don't know. Was my problem resentments or was it the lack of love, tolerance, and patience? I don't know. And I think, but he puts them together and says, get rid of the things that were objectable. And right after we do 6, he says, and the only mention in this book is 4 words, really, on step 7, because he says, we have completed step 7. You know, if you've done 6, you have completed step 7. When you've done 1, you done done the other. And it's kind of confusing here. So I think it's in these 2 steps, and basically the work there is 4 and 5, and once I've done that, then I'm able to move these things. I'm able to bring, at the end of step 7, I get rid of the things that have grown out of self that make me uncomfortable. And it did 4, 5, 6, and 7, in these steps, I get right with me. I make these adjustments of the things that have grown out of self, the things that were blocking my growth in 4, 5, 6, and 7. Charlie?
I think here that it's important that we might look for just a moment at the 3 terms that we use when we're dealing with these character defects. You know, step 5 says we admitted to God, to ourselves and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Step 6 says we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And step 7 says we humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. And the question's always coming up everywhere you go. Well, what's the difference between an exact nature of a wrong and a character defect and a shortcoming? And I think it's all tied together in one sentence in the first paragraph on page 76. It says, are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? And the things that we have admitted are objectionable are the things that we found in steps 4 and 5. And the objectionable things are what we're trying to get rid of that blocks us from doing God's will. And I don't think it makes any difference whether we call them the exact nature of a wrong, a defect of character, or a shortcoming. They're all things that we have found within our own characters that are objectionable to us. We now want to get rid of them. These are the things that we found when we took the inventory to disclose the unsaleable goods. Now, I've talked to three people that knew Bill Wilson, and I never did get to meet Bill, but I've talked to three people that knew him that tell me, all three tell me the same identical thing, that they asked Bill, why did you use exact nature of the wrongs in 5? Why did you use defects of character in 6? And why did you use shortcomings in 7? And Bill's answer to all three of these individuals was that when I was attending English courses in college, that they taught me never to use the same words to describe the same things in consecutive sentences. And Bill says there is no difference, that they are all the things that we want to get rid of. And it tells me, when I'm really ready to get rid of these objectionable things, it says, when ready, we say something like this: My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step 7. 6 and 7 are bang-bang steps. If we really take a good inventory and a good 5th step, and we really see how these things are robbing us of peace of mind, and that's going to cause us to drink, by God, we want to get rid of them. And if we want to get rid of them, we ask Him to take them away from us. And we don't need to complicate 6 and 7. They're very simple. Later on in the program, through years of sobriety, we find out more about character defects. We find out more about things that are objectionable. And we're continually going back to God and working with these things, but we have another step later on to take care of that. The main thing at this point is to get on with the program. We don't wait for perfection. In fact, the 12 and 12 says that step 6 is AA's way of saying that we aim toward perfection. That's what we're aiming at. We do not expect it, and we will never get it, and certainly we're not going to get it at this point. But we need to get on with the program and do the best we can. And as Joe says, for the first time in our life, we're right with ourselves. For the first time in our life, we know what makes us tick. We know what we've got that's bad. We know what we've got that's good. We know what we need to work on. We're right with God. We got the right relationship with Him in steps 1, 2, and 3, that He's going to be the director and we're going to be the follower. And now at the end of step 7, we're right with ourselves. Now, if you're feeling right with yourself and you're feeling right with God, you're feeling pretty good. But remember, we still got lots of shame and guilt and remorse. And there's another area that we're going to have to get right with, too, before we really begin to develop this peace of mind.
You had a life thing of recovery, a life obstacle to recover is to get right with the world around us, to get right with our fellow man. And he says that, you know, because of 1, 2, to 3, the things that grow out of self, because these problems over here, and the resentments and fears and all our other problems, they come down and cause people problems. So we've gotten right with God and we've gotten right with ourselves. Now we've got to get right with the world around us. And the first step of recovery, again, is an identifying step. We said step 1 was an identify. The first step in the series of these steps is always an identify. And when we got to work on ourselves, we had to take an inventory and identify what was wrong with us. This was an identifying step. Now, when we go to work on our relationship to the world around us, the first step is to identify what our problem is. Put it down. To identify it. And it's in step 8 that it tells us exactly how to do this. Now, the first thing we do to get over our people problems identified, make a list of all people we have harmed. That is the first step. And I think it's two things involved in this, and we can see the preciseness again in the steps, how we don't work them like we think they work, but precisely how they are laid out. The first thing we're told to do is to make a list. And I think that he says that this list should have been made when we took the inventory. We have a list of all persons we have harmed. whom we've been willing to make a minister. We made the list when we took the inventory, as Charlie designed it. So we have this list. And the next step in the step eight is after we make the list, then we become willing to the list. There's two things there. Now, it's real simple to make a list of the people you've harmed with honesty. And I think, as we was talking last night, the greatest thing that keeps us from working, making the list, is thinking about what we're going to have to do in 9. But we ain't on 9 yet. You know, we make the list of the people we have harmed, and the next phase is to become willing to the list. So there are two things there to do in step 8. Direct ourselves to do this. And then in 9, tells us what to do. And we can see the preciseness. Make direct amends. That is the first thing there. And then it tells us who to. Such people. The ones on the list. And then step 9, it later proceeds on further. And sometimes we hear in discussions, I like to hear people read the steps at the meetings, and I listen to these things. And the repetition of it, sometimes people change it so much. But this is a spiritual step, and this process is involved with God. And God is in step 9 when we say, wherever possible. This is His determination. Not whenever, as you often hear it read. No. But wherever, and God determines the wherever. Now it tells you what to do, who to do to it, and where to do it. And then it says when not to do it. When to do so would injure them or others. If we take our time and precisely go through these steps, then they're not difficult at all. But God plays a role in the wherever. And I know that I made this list as an individual, and it was tough. And then I became willing to the list. And then I made direct amends to these people as God made it possible. And I still have some of these people on the list, by the way. It's not possible. And some of them, it would injure them or others. So they are still on the list. And I know that we need not have fear. We're supposed to get around to that back up here in the other steps. And in these two steps, I identified there are two steps in the people problem-solving steps. One is to identify the problem, and the other is to eliminate it. And in these two steps, we get right with the world around us. And of course, our book tells us, you know, that we promise to go to any length. And it has to pile us on. You just got one more hill to climb. This is the last thing. And he begins to beg us, and he begins to gradually say, you have come this far, because we know that this is one more hill to climb. And it's after this that we have the great promises of the book, because they are fulfilled after steps 8 and 9. Charlie? I always call these Charlie's promises.
If we have now taken steps 8 and 9, and taken them thoroughly and completely to the best of our ability, and taken them like the book has said, we're now right in 3 different areas. We got right with God in steps 1, 2, and 3. We decided God was going to be the director, that we could no longer run the show. We got right with ourselves in step 4, 5, 6, and 7. We found out what's within us that blocks us from letting God be the director. We got honest with ourselves. We got right with people around us in steps 8 and 9. Now, at this point, we should be feeling pretty good. You know, if you're right with God, and you're right with yourself, and you're right with everybody around you and all the people that you've dealt with, you ought to be feeling good. And at this point, we reach the 11 promises contained in the big book. And at the beginning of these 11 promises, we once again have a warning. We have a condition. And at the bottom of page 83, the last paragraph, this is a person that has just completed, to the best of his ability, the first 9 steps. And it says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, if we are painstaking, if we have done it to the best of our ability, if we've really worked at the first 9 steps, this is what we're going to experience. We will be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. You remember Silkworth says, when we're sober, we're restless and irritable and discontented. Now we're going to know, we're going to comprehend the word serenity. To comprehend the word serenity, you've got to experience it. And if you have serenity, you're not restless and irritable and discontented. And we're going to know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Do you remember the story in Chapter 2 when Dr. Jung talked about the spiritual experience? Where he had seen people recover once in a while when old ideas and old concepts and old motives were suddenly cast aside and replaced with new ones. Here's the promise. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. You remember when we talked about lack of power, that was our dilemma? That the purpose of this book is to enable each of us to find a power greater than ourselves, which will solve our problem. We will suddenly realize that this power is solving our problems. We will suddenly realize that he's doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They're being fulfilled among us sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Another condition. You don't get these things without working. You don't get these things without taking lots of effort. And these promises will come true if we work for them. And I've gone back and analyzed these problems and analyzed me and analyzed these promises. And you know what I've realized is that used to, when I first started drinking, before alcohol became a serious problem in my life, when I drank, I had these promises. When I drank, my fear of people left me. When I drank, my fear of economic insecurity left me. When I drank, I intuitively knew how to handle situations. Every promise that's contained here is exactly what I used to get out of alcohol when alcohol was my friend. I comprehended the word serenity and I knew peace whenever I drank, you know. I suddenly am realizing that this program is giving me the same identical thing that I used to get from alcohol before alcohol became a problem. Isn't this wonderful? Isn't this great? Now then, the book tells me that after these promises, that this thought now brings us to step 10. And I'm like Joe. I'm not going to belittle step 10 by saying step 10 is a maintenance step. Step 10 is a growth step. When we look at step 10 first and read it, it looks like it would be a maintenance step if it was done exactly like it the step reads. Where it says we continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And in the reading of the step, we begin to think that, well, all I've got to do is inventory and see who I've wronged, and if I've wronged somebody, make amends for it. But that isn't what the book says to do. The book says this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Now let's look at that for just a moment. We continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. What step is that? What step is that? Step four. Continue to inventory myself, watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. This is step four. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. What am I dealing with? Step six and step seven. We discuss them with someone immediately. What step am I dealing with? I'm dealing with five. Then, if I've harmed someone, I make amends quickly. What steps am I dealing with? Eight and nine. Now, if I will practice step 10, the way the book says to practice it, on a continual daily basis, I am always working steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. And as long as I work steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 on a daily basis, then I'm going to get rid of more and more and more character defects. I'm going to have more love and tolerance for other human beings. I'm not going to be building up the shame and the guilt and the remorse over the things that I do. Step 10 is one of the greatest, greatest growth steps contained within the program. It's not just a maintenance step. It's a growth step.
Yeah, really.
I like to think that step 10 is 3, too, because self, you know, we got rid of self at 3, so it mentions watch for that. So really, it's an overlay of the first 9 steps. And if we worked a 10 step, if you worked the first 9 steps in a few months in the program and arrived to this great point, then if you were to rework this each day through the 10 step, you would grow each time you worked. You would improve. As Charlie said, after these promises are fulfilled, later on, you know, we went to it last night and back in Appendix 2, and they talked about a spiritual awareness. And you came to believe at step 2, and once you came to believe, you put the actions into your belief, and you worked those rest of those other steps, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, and you clean up all these areas, and then these things begin to take place in your life. Now, when all this peace and happiness, and you comprehend the word serenity, and all these things become to your life, and you become aware of this, you no longer believe in God, because you're getting results, and you have faith. So at step 9, you become to know that God has worked. And belief is sort of like a tadpole. It has to turn into the frog to really be something. So this is where we become to know that God has worked, because we see the existence of these things in our lives. And we continue to grow by working at step 10. And then it gives us great results, because it says after step 10, some more problems, some more things begin to take place in our lives. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even liquor. For by this time, sanity will have returned. And we will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we will cough from it like a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward alcohol has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it all. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We thought we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist. We are neither cocky nor afraid. This is our experience. This is how we react as long as we are in a spiritual fit condition. And one day along the line, after these great promises are met and we keep on working step 10, we wake up one day, as I did in my life, and you too probably, you wake up one day and all these guys told you, you know, this is going to work, and you go around. I went to all these meetings and they said, just keep on doing it. You're doing fine, you know. And they said, ain't it great to be sober? And I said, oh, they're crazy, you know. But they said, keep on doing it, you know. And I got sick and tired of going down there, them guys patting me on my back saying, boy, ain't it good to be sober? You know, it was hell, you know. But they didn't tell me whether it'd be all right one of these days. They said, oh, it's great, you know. Well, finally, I did comprehend the word serenity, and I knew peace. And one day, in a few short months, I woke up in the obsession, the drink was gone. I didn't know when it left. I said to myself, you know, we ain't wanting to drink for 2 or 3 days, you know. Never to return as long as I keep spiritually fit. And the only thing I had to do was to believe and put the effort. And if you have a prospect, tell him, you know, this is the way. He says, I feel bad. You know, tell him, don't do it like it did me. Tell him he's supposed to feel bad, you know. Don't tell him, it's great, man, ain't it? Ain't great, you know. But this will come as long, and this is how, as long as I kept in spiritual fit condition, I have not had this obsession to drink since come to this point. But it is easy to let up on the spiritual problem of action. And rest on our lives, we're headed for trouble. If we do, for alcohol is a cell phone. Watch this, it's a warning. We are not cured of alcoholism. Boy, we have to be careful because we're getting feeling good now. We are really have a daily reprieve continues on the maintenance of spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the visions of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not my will be done. And then we get into the second phase of our spiritual lives. After step three, we turn our will and our lives over the care of God. It's a great tool of step 11, through prayer and meditation, through talking and listening to God. And many times, you know, in my religious teaching, I had always been taught the tool of prayer, and that prayer was a great instrument. And I think that this is what was so fascinating to me, and I was glad to read about it in 12, in Bill's story, where he explained that this was one of the fascinating things that he learned in the program early, was the ability that prayer could be more than an instrument than swaying God's will and listing our petty needs. But prayer and meditation could be used as tools to receive God's will in our lives. And I think this is uniquely what the bunch of drunks told me. You know, I had a bunch of people that told me to pray. But these drunks didn't tell me. They didn't knock my prayers too much, but they said, man, you don't know how to listen to God. And this great step, the two of talking and listening to God, it's where it is a companion thing, because once I turned over my direction to God, in step 11 I was taught to talk, and I learned to listen to God. And it's through talking and listening to God that I can receive His directions in my life in step 11. And the power to carry out His directions, a very useful tool, a very powerful tool in a person's life. And I never like to even mention this step unless I talk about Christ. As he went into the garden, he was directed by God to go to the cross and die, a very strong thing to do. He said, now you got all the strength and the power to get rid of these people and to do anything you want to them. I don't want you to do that. I want you to go down there and let them take your life. Boy, that's powerful directions. When the time grew near, even a man of his caliber, he stopped 3 times. And he said something about, cannot this bitter cup be passed? He wrestled with the will of his maker. He had problems with God's directions. And I know that I'm going to have problems with God's directions. And he went through quite a bag in there, because he even almost got a little self-pity, because he asked the other fellows with him, why don't y'all watch with me 1 hour while I pray? But he came out of it by saying, not my will, but thy will be done. And we know that peace and serenity did come back into his life in a great example, because he was able to hang on the cross and let people take his life in total serenity and ask forgiveness for the people that were killing him. Total serenity through prayer and meditation. And our book tells us this, how to do this. It tells us, here we ask God for inspiration, intuitive, and thought of decision. We ask God. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. This is not turning it over to God. And in my mind, I know that I have a small bit of information in here, my little computer, as I look at it. It's limited. And if I direct my life onto that, it's unmanageable. But if I have a problem, then I can turn off my little computer, and I have little tapes, and they go, sometimes I go for an answer, and it runs out of information, and they just flip, 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 and this is my frustration period. And when my little tapes is turning, I can't get no information. But I learned to cut them off, relax and take it easy. And once I cut these little tapes off, then I plug into the giant computer, this power of knowledge, this ultimate source in the universe. And while they are off and I relax and I don't struggle, then some additional information is fed into my small computer. And then later on, about an hour later, I start my computer up. And I think about this problem I had that morning that I was thinking about, and something says, why don't you go over and see old Charlie about it? Well, that's some information I didn't have an hour ago. And for many years, I used to say, well, I'm sure glad I thought of that. But it says a power from within. Through talking and listening to God, I can develop an ability of a power from within. And then our book goes on to talk about step 11. It says what used to be an occasional hunch becomes a working part of our minds. And we develop a sixth sense of directions through talking and listening to God. A very powerful instrument, and it says, you know, you have to be careful because you won't be spiritually inspired at all times, and you might pay for this in all sort of absurd way. But through great practice, through years and years of practice, and it's up to you as individuals, you know, is how good you want to go into this. And this is what I think the last three steps were. It really breaks the men from the boys, and they are growth steps because it don't take too much of this program to not drink, to bring about a personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism. But then it talks about that some of us have found another dimension of living, have been rocketed into another dimension of living and found a little bit of heaven. You know, there's a whole lot more. This offers a whole lot more than not drinking. It's according to where you want to stop. As you can learn and practice day in and day out to talking and listening to God. And each day in my life, I know that I have two things that I can travel up. I have the choice of self-will still yet. I have the choice to use my directions or God's directions. And I wish I could get rid of it, but God left that intact. Self-will is left there. And I have a unique center in my life, and I know that it is one center in every life, one center of any in this room, one center of everything. And that when God is in the center of my life, it's some balance because it goes around like a hub. He's on the center, and my life is in balance. The resentments and the impatience and all these things have some great balance with God in the center of my life. But this center can only be occupied by one thing. And I have the right of self-will, so every once in a while, I retake the center over, and God will have to move off to some other side. And his life spins still around him. There's an imbalance in my life. So I cannot usually, as an individual, I cannot recognize when this takes place. I cannot recognize it sometimes whether I'm traveling off of God's will or my will. But through great detection of step 10, I usually can recognize the things when they start getting out of balance. I can recognize the unique moment when there's discomfort in my life. And if I'll turn, I'll find that it is a problem that grew out of self because I have taken over. I have traveled on my directions. But through step 11, I can learn to talk and listen to God and receive his directions and ask for the power to carry them out. And I think that this is the foundation of living after we go through these steps is to grow in the area of effectiveness by using 10 and 11. And there's no end to what we can grow if we continue to work these steps. And I think step 11 is a powerful part of a recovered alcoholic's life. Charlie.
Remember back in step 3, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand him. And we've been working steps 4 through 10. And this removes the things from us which keeps us from getting God's will. Now in step 11, at this point, we have probably grown to the point of where we are now ready to start receiving God's will. And we pray, we seek through prayer and meditation, talking and listening to God, to try to find out what his will is for us. And you know, we have a lot of trouble with what God's will is. But God's will for the human race has always been to put no other gods before me and do what you can for your fellow man. And there's a statement in the big book that says, Shoemaker, stick to thy last. Do what you can do best. And you know, most alcoholics die. I don't know why The alcoholics that are in this room aren't dead. I think every one of us in this room, if we carefully review our past and if we're alcoholic, we have had times which we should have been dead. Maybe car wrecks or maybe various other things. But for some reason or other, there was a power that was not a human power that interfered with that death and kept us alive. And I think this program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a God-given program. And I think God can only work through people, people to people. And I think he watches alcoholics, and I think he sees the ones that he says, I'm going to be able to use this person. But before I can use them, they're going to have to go through all the things that alcoholics go through, or they'll never be able to identify with another alcoholic. And I'm going to let them go through the car wrecks and the jailhouses and the hospitals and the divorce courts and whatever it is that they need to learn what they have to have. But in the meantime, I'm going to save their life. And as he saves our life, then the day comes that he says he's ready for me to use him. And I think he gives each of us a moment of truth. And that moment of truth is the point at which we reach bottom, where we can see what's happening to us because of alcohol, and we have the desire to do something about it. And we come to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we learn how to recover from alcoholism. At this point of the game, we are the experts on alcoholism. You know, all the medical doctors and all the psychiatrists and all the ministers and all the lawyers and all of the learned men in the world don't know as much about alcoholism as we do. Because we have experienced alcoholism, we know what alcoholism is. Because we have experienced a method of recovery from alcoholism, we know how to recover from alcoholism. There isn't anybody else in the world that knows that but we alcoholics. The only asset that we have is our past. Now, we have the opportunity to take our past and our asset of the knowledge of alcoholism and the knowledge of recovery and help other people. And I think God's will for us, those that are fortunate enough to have recovered from alcoholism, is to help other alcoholics. And I think that's all I need to be concerned with. I don't think I need to be concerned with making a lot of money, with having the things that I want. And as I ask God for the power to carry this out, this working with and trying to help other alcoholics, I find that I receive abundantly everything that I need. And that's what I'm asking for when I ask for the power, to give me the power to carry out this will of His. I think also I have to ask for the power to overcome my own selfishness and self-centeredness, because, you know, it's not easy to carry the message to other alcoholics. They don't call you at convenient times. They call at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And it's snowing outside and it's cold and your bed's warm and you're tired. But it's time to get up and go. And you have to have the power to do it. And many times I don't want to do God's will. Many times I don't want to do His will. But I have never failed yet to get the power to do it when I've asked for it. Sometimes in our daily lives and living in the society we live in now, we have difficulty in determining whether this job is God's will, or whether that's God's will, or whether other things are God's will. I have a method that I can always use, that if I can't determine what God's will is, I can always determine what it's not. And I can almost see God a long time ago up on top of these mountains, saying to the human race that I've given you 3 basic instincts of life. One for security, one for prestige, and one for sex. And I can almost hear him saying, these 3 basic instincts are necessary for the survival of the human race, but they are so strong, they're going to make you do things that will throw you in conflict with other people. And as you're thrown in conflict with other people, you will suffer, and you will have pain, and you will have humiliation. And he says, now I would like to tell you the things that you can't do if you want to have peace of mind. And he says, zap, 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 and put down the Ten Commandments. And I find in my life today, if I don't know whether it's God's will or not, I can check it against the Ten Commandments. And any time I break one of the Ten Commandments, I'm thrown in direct conflict with another human being. And if I'm not thrown in direct conflict with another human being, since I'm born with a built-in conscience and I know the difference between right and wrong, I'm thrown in conflict with my own conscience. I never have any trouble determining what his will is not. And if we work these steps up to this point, we now reach what I like to refer to as the 12th promise. Oh, there's promises all through the book, but I like to call this one the 12th promise. And it's the beginning of step 12. Very simple, it says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And this is a promise to me that if I will work the first 11 steps to the best of my ability, that I will have a spiritual awakening. And what is a spiritual awakening? Bill Wilson says in the 12 and 12, there's probably as many kinds of spiritual awakenings as there are people in AA. But he said they all have certain things in common. And that is that we're able to feel and believe and do things that we could not do before on our own strength unaided. And I can feel things that I couldn't feel before. I feel the nearness of my Creator. I feel love for other human beings. I'm like Joe, I had Hollywood love. I had love mixed up with sex and passion. But today I can feel an honest, true concern for other human beings that I could never feel before because of my selfishness and my self-centeredness. I can believe things that I didn't believe before. I can believe that God dwells within each of us. And I can believe that every human being that's alive has both good and bad in him too. And I can believe that God is always available any time that I turn to him in sincerity. And I can do things I couldn't do before. I can stay sober. And I couldn't do that before. I have no doubt in my mind but what I have experienced a spiritual awakening by the working of the first 11 steps of the program. In step 12, we have two more things. And I like to say that these are conditions to my keeping the spiritual awakening that I had by working the first 11 steps. And the middle part of step 12 says, after I've had this spiritual awakening, then I need to carry this message to other alcoholics. And I don't have the time or the choice or the place. I don't have the right to make the decision as to whether I do or I don't. If my telephone rings, I am responsible to make the 12-step call. I don't have the right to send it to Gary. I don't have the right to call Joe and say, Joe, I need to be somewhere else. Will you go make this 12-step call? If God wanted this man to have somebody else's phone number, he would have given him somebody else's phone number. And what is the message that I have to carry to him? It's a very simple message. That if you've been drinking and you're screwed up in your life, or if you're in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and you're not happy, I used to be just like you are. And I worked the first 11 steps, and I had a spiritual awakening, and I'm not like you. Now, if you want to be like we are, you work the first 11 steps, and you'll have a spiritual awakening, and then you'll be like the rest of us. This is the message that we carry. And also, in order for me to maintain this spiritual awakening that I have, I must practice these principles in all my affairs. And what are these principles? In how it works, it tells us, do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. It says the principles we have set down are guides to progress rather than spiritual perfection. And what have they set down? Just before that statement, they put down the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I go to the 12 and 12, and I open it up to the preface. And it says the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are a set of principles, spiritual in nature, which if practiced will expel the obsession to drink. The principles are the 12 steps. And I've got to practice them in all my affairs. Now, it's easy for me to practice the principles here in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I love you people, and I don't want to hurt anybody here. I won't steal from another AA member. But what do I do out on the outside? I will have love and patience and tolerance for people in AA, but how about the other people in the world that I have to live with also? I'm not going to do anything to hurt an AA or an Al-Anon, but how about the other people that I also have to live with? The hardest place for me to practice the principles of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is in my own home. There is where my security is threatened more so than anywhere else. My wife's always spending that damn money that I think we ought to be saving. There's where my sex life is threatened. There's where my pride rears its head when she and the kids don't do what I want them to do. But I spend the majority of my time either in AA or in my own home. And if I can't practice the principles in my own home, I can't practice them anywhere else. And if I don't practice the principles, then I'm going to be back in conflict again with people. If I don't carry the message, I'm going to be bored in AA. And the spiritual awakening is going to begin to leave, and I'm going to become restless and irritable and discontented. And then I'm going to look for the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. This is not an easy program. These 12 steps are the most difficult thing to do that I've ever done in my life. But they are not hard to understand. It's a very simple, it's a very uncomplicated program. We as human beings complicate it because there's things in there we don't want to do, and we try to reword them so that we don't have to do the things we don't want to do. If we will practice the program, we can have the spiritual awakening. And with the spiritual awakening, we are then rocketed into the fourth dimension that they talk about in the big book. You know, I have a life now that I didn't dream existed. I didn't know that you could live without worry and without fear. I didn't know that you could live without hurting other people. I didn't know that you could live this kind of life. But I found that you can. And it's great.
I think the 12 steps and summing it up, it's been great to be here, by the way. And sometimes we wind down on 12 step, and we get a lot of assumptions on a 12 step too. But it tells us very plainly, it identifies a specific person, a certain individual, one who has had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. It identifies a person, a certain individual in AA. It doesn't say everybody is supposed to carry this message. Only those who have had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. Now, those people are supposed to carry a message, and they have a message. Because if something has worked for you, then you know it works, don't you? You know it works. It has already worked for you. So if it has worked for you, then you know it works, and then you can carry a message to another person. And when you tell another person what you know, it becomes a message of hope for him. That's all. Your faith becomes his hope. And if he takes his hope and comes to believe, he can put actions into what he believes, and along the line, one day it'll work for him, and then he will know. And then he becomes a messenger once he knows. And so this is where the first 100 started, and now it's 1.5 million of us through this chain that we have formed from hope to belief to work, through faith, through knowing, through caring. And so, you know, the program doesn't allow believers to carry the message. You know, believers don't really have a message. That's too weak. You have to know. So a specific identifies this person, and he carries the message of where he got it at. Because we hear a lot of people say, you know, well, I carry the message by just living it. And I wonder how many drunks that we walked past sober. If you don't know where you got it at, I don't think you have carried the message. You might have said you got it down in Weingarten's or Kroger's or somewhere, you know, one of them grocery stores. But if you don't tell them where you got it at, you have not carried the message. And we are not healers, by the way. We carry messages of healing. We care where this healing, how this healing can come back. And I think sometimes some of us get to be healers. We carry a message of healing, and we have a very humble role, like the prodigal son. He came back home, and he didn't get to be a son. He just be one of the servants. So we all have a servant role of carrying a messenger. And so we have to act as messengers and not get upset into the results of our message or anything. Just do our job. This is a humble, very humble role. And I like to look at Paul Revere in this 12th step. He was one of our greatest messengers in history. And he rode through the night saying, the British are coming. The British are coming. He did a fine job. You know. And this is the way we are AA members are to perform. He didn't get off the horse and say, now, if I was y'all, I'd tell you what I should do. You know, he didn't get into people's business. He just carried the message. And so this is our role. We don't have to, you know, get off the horse and tell them all what they ought to do. This is not our role. This is God's business. This is the 12th step. God takes over the how and the why of this. And our role is to just be the humble role of carrying the message to the alcoholic. This is where I got this. And I think that there's something, once we understand this step, this is something that each and every one of us in AA can do, and can do very efficiently. We can tell the other person where the spiritual change came by as a result of these steps. Now, you know, he can do what he wants to do with it. So this is really the icing on the cake, and this is the great service step, the one that breaks the chain. It makes this great chain that makes the fellowship in which we live in today. In closing, I like to say that I really thoroughly enjoyed this, and this has been great. I hope that someone here, regardless of what we said, how much of you got out of it, if it was still some interest to you to get back into your book, and never forget what this program has to offer. You're never going to find it if you would work as hard as you could for the rest of your life. You will never forget what this program has to offer in your life. And, you know, really, I think this is a great enthusiasm that I have. And at times, I like to feel that, you know, I really got to work hard and work fast because I really want to get as much of this as I can. And even as we sit here today, the great belief, the reality is that we sit here today, we all have great lives. But it's a real truth that as we sit here today, our lives could be twice as good as it is. If we will work at it, this program offers that. It could be 10 times as great as it is today. Now, it's really great. But what fascinates about me that this program can be 10 times greater this next year if I choose to work, I put the effort into working these steps in my life. It's been good to be here today, and I'm going to close out. I thank you. I really enjoy it.
We appreciate you all asking us down here. We enjoy it more than anybody else does. Yeah. Thank you very much.
There's no way I can express our appreciation for you all coming down here, or the gratitude for being allowed to attend these two sessions. There is one thing I'd like Charlie to share with you. Charlie's real fond about talking about some of the reasons for having to recover from alcoholism. He's also real fond about talking about these 55-mile speed limits. And Charlie has a little bit more incentive than most of us. I'd like for you to put yourself in his position while you're talking to the highway patrol who asks you your name, address, and telephone number.
I wondered if Joe would let me tell you where I live. I live in a little town, or on a farm, really, but the closest town is a little town called Maysville, Arkansas. Maysville, Arkansas is in the northwest corner of the state of Arkansas. It's the last town before you go into Oklahoma and also before you go into Missouri. Now, my farm is really on the Oklahoma side. I have a
Oklahoma driver's license, I buy Oklahoma car tags, and my children go to school in Oklahoma. But my mailing address, since the closest town is Maysville, Arkansas, my mailing address is Maysville, Arkansas. My phone and my address as shown on my driver's license is all Maysville, Arkansas. Now, this little town of Maysville, Arkansas does not have a bank. And the closest bank for Maysville, Arkansas is in a place called Southwest City, Missouri. The name of the bank is the Cornerstone Bank, Southwest City, Missouri. Now, if you're a rambling drunk and you're off in a strange town and you don't know anybody and you've run out of money and you need a drink real bad and you go in a liquor store and you ask this guy if he'll cash a check, he says, "Well, I don't know you. Who are you and where are you from?" And you tell him that your name's Charlie Parmley and you're from Maysville, Arkansas. He says, "Well, do you have any identification?" And I say, "Yes, I have my driver's license." And I show him my driver's license, and it says the state of Oklahoma on it with an address of Maysville, Arkansas. And it takes about 30 minutes to get this all explained to him. And finally, he says, "Well, all right, I guess it'll be okay." And you whip out your checkbook, and it says the Cornerstone Bank in Southwest City, Missouri. And you have a hell of a time getting anything done. And today, I'm deathly afraid of the highway patrol stopping me. If they do, I'm going to jail as sure as hell. They'll never believe me.
Thank you. If you'll all stand, we'll be dismissed before us, please. Wanda, would you lead us, please?
Trespass against us, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.